And it goes in similar to, unfortunately, like when people become widowed, your situation changes. And I know that when it happens, the last thing you want to do is be like, let me have a conversation with my accountant. But after, I'll say, a little bit of time, definitely do it within the year. So then that way, any changes, especially if you've never been, I'll say, involved, like you said, every year there could be a large bill that could be due and you're not sure because you haven't been involved. And that's totally fine. I deal with plenty of people where I only ever speak with one spouse because they are the finance person of the relationship. But sit down, have the conversation, be like, what should I expect? This is what's going on. Are there changes? And then similar, sit down with your financial advisor. Are we having capital gains? Are there RMDs? If you were both collecting Social Security, or if only one of you was, how does that then move? What needs to be changed on that side?
Welcome to Financially Ever After Widowhood, the podcast where we empower women to take control of their financial future after the loss of a spouse. I'm your host, Stacey Francis, president and CEO of Francis Financial, an award-winning and nationally recognized financial advisory firm. With the help of incredible guests, I'm ready to guide you through this challenging transition. Today, we're getting the tax ABCs from accountant Samantha Harris. She is a CPA and has her own tax preparation service company for not only individuals, but also for companies. She provides services helping people make sure that they're paying what they owe and not overpaying what they don't. She works very closely with her clients and has firsthand knowledge of accounting from both a financial and business perspective. And today we're going to be talking about the important tax information widows need to know, especially if you've never filed your taxes on your own. We'll be talking about not only how you find the right accountant, but things that you need to know to make sure that you're saving on taxes. Make sure you stay to the end because Samantha talks about the different filing statuses that you can choose that could potentially save you thousands, if not tens of thousands in taxes. So without further ado, please help me welcome our guest today, Samantha Harris. Samantha, I'm so excited to have you here. You're one of the least intimidating people that I've ever met. But I have to tell you, a lot of our clients are intimidated by accountants.
I completely understand.
Have you ever heard of that?
I get that all the time. There's two things. It's always the big, scary accountant that's going to yell at me and tell me I've done the wrong thing. Or the other thing is always that the IRS is going to come and take me to jail. And I always tell clients, I was like, nobody's going to jail. I promise. It's not a problem.
I know, but I have to tell you, the IRS, those are two letters that I just never, whenever I get a note from the IRS of like, you owe this or whatever, just seeing that envelope with those three letters and the return address, it really creates anxiety. Why is that? Why does the IRS scare us so?
I'm not sure where it came from originally, but I think it's just this fear of I did something wrong. And now that I either the letter's coming and I'm going to owe millions more dollars, or I made a mistake on the return, or something's wrong. And then again, it's always this like the IRS is this big dark hole that's going to bring me off to jail someplace. Every time someone's like, well, I did my return on my own, but I feel like I messed it up. And I'm so worried that, you know, they're going to bring me to jail. And I'm always like, nope, you're not going to jail. The worst thing that they're honestly going to do is pretty much send you, similar to what you said, you're going to get a letter saying that you owe more money. And that's usually what they want, more money. Usually what I tell clients, when you get a letter in the mail, don't freak out. Like, and I understand that initial, like you open it and it's, the letters are scary. They're long. They're many pages. They could be very confusing to read. So I always tell clients, when you get the letter, scan it, send it to me, and then let's jump on a call and let's talk it through. And then that way I could explain to you what's happening. And it could be anything. Like some of them are, I'll call them like simple letters, which just means like you didn't pay estimates in, so now you owe an additional interest and penalty. Some of them could be a little more complicated where it's like, hey, you know, left a form off, like, you know, you left a 1099 off or a W-2, you forgot you worked a job. And again, we could work with it, respond back to both the IRS. And then also, it's not just the IRS, not to scare people even more, the state could send you letters too. And that's one thing to always remember is the IRS and the state. So you always kind of have to go on both sides to make sure that all documents are kind of included. But again, never freak out. And the main thing I always tell clients when you get a letter, as much as it is to ignore it, never ignore the letter. That is the worst thing that could be done. Always respond to it or do something. And again, always bring your accountant in. That is what they are there to help you with.
So a lot of the people listening today, not all, but a good number, were not the ones who was really interfacing with the accountant for their tax return during their marriage. Maybe their partner did that. And so, yeah, they signed it or, you know, electronic signature, but they weren't really part of the whole process. And I think that that's part of what intimidates people also about accountants, because they just haven't really had as much experience or a relationship. So if someone's really never filed their taxes before, where do they start now that they're on their own?
So I would say the first place to start is to, I'll say, gather your old tax return, because that's going to be the first thing that any new accountant is going to ask for usually, because we always use that to kind of historically see what happened and to kind of guide you onto what new forms would need it. So it'd be the first thing is to guide it. Most prior accountants should have sent you the return either electronically or a hard copy. And if you can't find it, do not worry, just reach out to them and they have to send you a copy of the return. So once you have that, and again, it's going to look, it might look like gibberish to you, and that is totally fine. It's going to be a bunch of lines, a bunch of numbers. And if it means nothing to you, do not worry. What I usually advise clients, especially when they're coming to me the first time, is kind of to get on a call or a Zoom or even an in-person meeting. I know that's, you know, weird now after COVID, but whatever you feel comfortable with, and have the accountant kind of walk you through what happened before and then kind of what happens now. And what I mean by that is if your spouse had a W-2 job, and it's going to be different for each year as well. So like things are going to change, but the best thing to do is to sit with the accountant, set up a meeting, and they should walk you through the documents that used to be and now how things are going to be changed. And then as far as like if your spouse was working with an accountant, and again, you had no connection with them, build the relationship with them. So like reach out to them, sit down. And most accountants, like I've had that where, you know, unfortunately somebody passes away and then we have to reach out, start the conversation with the person. And honestly, sometimes I might not be the person because my relationship was with the spouse. So do not feel any obligation to stay with the current accountant if you don't feel comfortable with them. There's nothing there. Again, you need the return. And then the main thing I'd say, if you start looking for other accountants, it's kind of like, where do I start? Like, it's not like anything. Where I get most of my clients from, again, I'm sure similar to you, is personal referrals. Ask your friends, ask your family, ask people who they use. If you are working, whether you work for yourself or you work at a big company and you have like a W-2 job, ask your coworkers, do they use somebody? Sometimes a lot of people at the same company, they all use a similar accountant because they're familiar with your situation. If you work for yourself and you're like, I have no idea where to start, I have a ton of clients, they're part of different message boards where there's like, you know, you could throw out a, you know, does anybody have a good accountant or anything like that? And then people will come back with suggestions. What I highly recommend also doing is interviewing multiple accountants. And the reason I suggest that is because, again, you want to be with somebody that you feel comfortable with, that when you ask questions, they're not going to like brush you off or try to be like, don't worry about it, it's not important. Any question that you have about your taxes is important and they should be able to answer it. And again, if you're like, I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to be asking, we'll get to that later. But in the beginning, it's again, you just want to have that trust with the person. So then that way, when you're like, what do I do? They come and give you an answer and explain stuff to you that you understand. And it's all about the relationship, because honestly, the forms don't change from one of us to another. It's the same 1040. Do I trust this person? Are they talking to me? Are they also the big one that I get are our communication? Are they answering my emails? Are they some reason a lot of accountants just disappear sometimes? I don't know why or how.
I have to say, Samantha, it's like, where did the accountant go? I don't know.
I do. The amount of people that I've had come to me and be like, you know, I'm looking for a new accountant. My last accountant just sort of fell off the face of the earth. I'm still searching for them because I have no idea where they went as well.
I'm still searching for them. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like you really bring up a good point of, you know, ask people that you trust, ask your financial advisor. I know for me, that's one of the people that we're asked about most often. You know, having a good accountant is really important, especially because there are a lot of topics that you're going to have questions about. You now have the thought about what filing status should I be having now that I'm a widow. You know, if I am taking the portfolio that was inherited by me from my spouse and I need to rebalance it and have it invested in a different way, is that going to create some taxes? And if so, what does that look like and how do I prepare? So there are a lot of questions along with that. So first thing, how do you understand the tax return? I love tax returns, but I realize I'm a little unique in that way. And the reason why I love them is I feel like Sherlock Holmes when I'm seeing a tax return, because they can tell and paint a story about someone's financial situation, not only their income, but what they might be contributing to retirement or taking from retirement accounts, how much they might have in savings accounts or brokerage accounts, if they are renting out a property and whether or not that property is profitable. There are so many things they can tell you. And so I've taken dozens and dozens and dozens of courses and the CFP to focus on that. But like, I realize 1% of the population is that passionate.
Yes.
About,
very much
about
so.
Understanding the tax return. So what is your strategy for a person who is normal? That is like, sure. I'd like to understand what's going on, but what Stacey's has done, she's a little too out there for me. That's not my cup of tea.
So the way that I normally go about it, especially in the beginning, is I like to just have pretty much like an informal conversation with the person and be like, tell me what you think your tax situation is. And some people will be like, you know, I think I'm easy. I have a 9-to-5, I have this. And then stuff will start to come out from what it is, because I like to kind of hear what they think they have going on. And then I get a copy of their return. And then that paints the broader picture. For example, like, okay, a simple one would be like, oh, we had a whole conversation about like, you know, your job, your side business, your rental property. You didn't mention that you have 3 kids. They're on the return. So now does that come into, you know, planning for the future? Do the kids have a similar, like, do the kids have investment accounts? Do those need to be accounted for? The kids need to file their own returns. Or the kids, I'll say younger, where they're in any kind of on the books daycare or have a nanny that's on the books. Do you have payroll for that nanny? Are there 529 contributions? Is one of the kids in college and has a part-time job? Can you still claim them as a dependent? There's different questions that come in. But I kind of like to, like I said, I like the informal conversation first just to get to know it, because then I could sort of ask the questions, kind of dive into that. And then once I get the return, I have the backstory of it and then kind of go through. So for me, it's kind of going through, seeing what's on the return. So it's pretty much like, okay, do you have a side business? What happened in previous years? Are things changing now? Like, are you looking to, you know, buy that investment property? Are you looking to buy a house, or what's happening? So I'm always a big fan, like the paper does tell a story, but then I'm always a big fan of just communication, because there are so many things that you don't know unless you just sit down and ask the person the questions directly. Because like people will be like, I'm having a kid. I'll be like, okay, great. Let's go through all the things that happened with a child as far as it relates to taxes. And then even on the flip side, when somebody is like, people will be like, oh, I'm thinking about getting married. And I'll be like, that's great. And then they'll be like, what happens marriage-wise? Like, you're combining a lot of either, like, say, properties, income, there's a lot of things that happen. And then I'll break down the tax part of it. But then I always remind people, like, this is just the tax part of it. Do not get married just for the tax part of it. There are plenty of other reasons to get married, not just for taxes. So I kind of like to just have that conversation to dive into what's in somebody's financial situation. The other thing is I connect with their financial advisors and planners as well, because you guys know a much bigger part of the picture than I do. Because while I do see the 1099s that show capital gains, dividends, et cetera, what I don't see is the value in those accounts. So I just see the end result of the year. And I like to have those conversations through the year. In fact, I got an email from somebody today being like, they just, financial advisors, like, hey, they sold a bunch of stocks. There's a big capital gain. What should we do estimates wise? And then I jump in. I'm like, this is what we should do. So then that way everybody's on board throughout the year. So there's certain things that happen, and it's, the one thing I'd say that will come from all of this is never be afraid to ask questions or just shoot your accountant an email and be like, I'm doing this now, or this is a change. I always tell clients, like, always reach out to me during the year if you have any kind of change, or even if it's something you're not sure of, because honestly, the 5-minute conversation that could happen in June could save you so much headache and hassle when we come to file. Because if by the time March hits and we're filing, I'm honestly just the messenger of, unfortunately, not good, great news at that point.
That's so important. And actually, this has happened to me a few times where April 15th or 16th, whatever date it falls on, the day before, get a notification from my accountant saying, you owe X, yep. I'm pulling from your Chase checking account that, you know, we have for ACH routing, just giving you a heads up. And sometimes, Samantha, it's been like, okay, not much.
Yeah.
Other times it's been six figures.
Yep. Always a scratch.
And it's one of those things where, like, I have an absolute heart attack of, like, where is this coming from?
Yes.
The good news is that because this has happened a few times, I have a much more proactive relationship with my accountant where yes. I make the meetings before year end and say, okay, this is the profit and loss for the business of what it's looking like. What do we need to be doing so that I don't have a near heart attack and have yes. a good 2 to 3 years clipped off my life expectancy come April? And so yeah. I'm doing that now. But I think that for the vast majority of people, their accountants are not reaching out to having those conversations.
Yeah.
Similar mm-hmm. to you, which you're doing. And so people who are listening, letting us all know that you need to reach out to your accountant.
Yeah.
You need to be one, the one in October, in November, maybe early December, but don't put it too late to make sure that you're doing the right thing so that you don't have surprises.
Yeah. And the reason, like, most people sometimes might be like, well, why isn't my accountant reach out? And it's like, because I don't know what life events are happening. So
yeah.
If, for example, like, I had a client, a few months ago, they lost their job. They reached out. They're like, I lost my job. This is the situation. I just want to, and we walk through all the different possibilities. What happened? Do they need to make changes? And it goes in similar to, unfortunately, like, when people become widowed, your situation changes. And I know that when it happens, the last thing you want to do is be like, let me have a conversation with my accountant. But after, I'll say, a little bit of time, definitely do it within the year. So then that way, any changes, especially if you've never been, I'll say, involved. Like you said, every year there could be a large bill that could be due and you're not sure because you haven't been involved. And that's totally fine. I deal with plenty of people where I only ever speak with one spouse because they are the finance person of the relationship. But sit down, have the conversation, be like, what should I expect? This is what's going on. Are there changes? And then similar, sit down with your financial advisor. Are we having capital gains? Are there RMDs? If you were both collecting Social Security, or if only one of you was, how does that then move? What needs to be changed on that side? And then as far as usually that kind of leads into, I'll say, the filing status, like ask your accountant about filing status. Because your filing status is going to change if you were married filing jointly. So the way that the IRS always sees everybody is whatever you are on the last day of the year, you are the entire year. So if your spouse dies anywhere within the year, for that year, you will file married filing jointly. Going forward into the next year, your status could change and your status is going to change based on your situation. So you could change into a single status. You could change into head of household. You could change into a qualifying widower. It all depends on a lot of other factors that your accountant should know and walk you through based on your situation. A lot of these, without like boring everybody with tax lessons, though you might enjoy the tax lessons, it pretty much has to do with pretty much if you have any dependents, how old the dependents are, if you're pretty much caring for a household, providing more than half of the support for the household. So there's a lot of factors in play, but these are all good questions to ask when you sit down. And these are all things when you sit with your accountant, they already have some of that background as well. So they should be aware, like, okay, this is what's going to happen. This is it. But again, there might be changes that need to happen. Usually what happens is the first year is the hardest because it's the biggest change. And then everything kind of the next year will be more, I'll call it status quo. That it might not be the case for everybody. And the one thing I always say, no matter what, everybody's tax situation is different. Just because your neighbor got back X amount, you can't compare. Everybody has completely different situations. People have businesses, rental properties, kids. You know, you have no idea what's going on. So never look at somebody else and be like, well, they had this. Why didn't I get that? It's never apples to apples.
So just kind of looping back, some of the things that you're saying is, you know, really important to meet with your accountant to better understand before the end of the year what things are going to look like. And whatever your status is as of December 31st, that is what your status is going to be considered for the whole year. So if your spouse just, you know, unfortunately passed away on December 29th, and you now are quote unquote single, a widow on December 31st, you're going to count that full year as a widow.
So that's where it gets a little confusing. So not for when your spouse passes away. So when your spouse passes away, that first year, no matter when they pass, so if they pass January 2nd or if they pass December 30th, you're considered married for that full year.
That's amazing. Okay, yeah. Because guess what? For divorce, it's the exact opposite.
Yes. So the divorce, the same. If you get divorced January 2nd or you get divorced December 30th, on the last day of the year, you are single. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know if I knew why the IRS set up half the things they did, but some of it makes no sense. But that's how it is for that. So then what would happen is for the current year, you'd be married filing jointly. Or if you normally filed marriage on separately, again, everybody's situation's different. But then the next year would be the first year that the new status would, so to say, take hold.
Yep. Now, filing status, why this matters? I mean, does it really matter if you're single or head of house or qualifying widower? My understanding is that qualifying widower, you can typically take for 2 years after your spouse has passed away.
Yes.
And you do have to remain unmarried, but you're able to essentially have the same benefit of the higher buckets of income that you can earn before you get to those high, high, high tax brackets.
Yes.
It's almost as if your spouse never died and you are continuing to do married filing jointly.
Yes,
so you're really benefiting from those bigger buckets that allow you to keep more of your income taxed at lower rates.
Yes. Just to kind of, I'll say, break down what that is a little more, because some people get confused where, just to make up fake numbers here, if you make $100,000, you're going to fall in as a, I'm just looking at the tax rate schedules, as a single person, you'd be in the 24% bracket. But as a married filing jointly couple, you would be in the 22% bracket. And what that means, though, isn't that your full $100,000 is taxed at either 22 or 24%, because people kind of confuse that sometimes. The way that it works is, I think of it as like, I call it a step ladder. So the first, and I'm rounding here just to make this easier, the first 10,000 is taxed at a 0%. The next 20,000 is taxed at 10%. Then the next 20,000 is taxed at 22%, and so on and so on. So once you go above that, so that's why sometimes clients will be like, well, I don't want to move into the next bracket. And I'm like, but you're making more money. That's always a good thing on that side. But the brackets shift. So when you're single, like I said, you're in a higher bracket, even though you're making the same amount of money. So that's why it's more beneficial to kind of keep that married filing jointly. It's called qualifying widower surviving spouse status, because you're getting the better tax brackets that are in. And then the same if you're a head of household. So a head of household pretty much means that you are a single parent, you're unmarried, you have a dependent that lives with you for more than half the year, and that you provide the household for you, a shelter dependent. And then that, the brackets are even better because, again, they're lower, the top notch of where those, the higher percentages are going to kick in are higher. So it's better for you. The other way that it also affects is standard deduction. So what happens is, as a single person, again, I'm looking at 2023 numbers. These numbers each year are changed based on inflation and the IRS. They publish them annually on that side for anybody that wants to go look. But for like a single person, the standard deduction is $13,850. But for a married filing jointly couple, the standard deduction is $27,700. So you see there's a big difference. And what the standard deduction is, again, not to bore people, but it pretty much is, if your taxable income, again, is using just that $100,000, we then take away either that $13,000 or $27,000. So it brings down your taxable income. So you pretty much, you are owing less in taxes. So that's where this really comes in handy on that side, because you're still able to keep that higher amount.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the standard deduction at that $13,000, you're making $100,000. You're only having to pay taxes on then just what, $83,000? If I'm going to do the name, do the math.
So it'd be $87,000.
Yeah. And the $27,000, you know, having the standard deduction of married filing jointly that you are able to get as a qualifying widower, that $100,000, you're only having to pay taxes on $73,000. So, really powerful. Now, there's a catch, and you talked about it, but I want to go back to it, because not everybody can choose the filing status of qualifying widow.
Yes.
My understanding, again, is that you need to have a dependent child that is living in the home all year that you provide support for.
Yes. So you would need to have a child, a stepchild, or adopted child mm-hmm. who pretty much qualifies as your dependent for the year. They also, the dependent cannot meet the gross income test, which means pretty much they can't make enough money to support them for themselves. And they can't also be married is the other thing. They also, the taxpayer claimed can't be dependent of another taxpayer. And they also have to, qualifying person has to live with the child in the taxpayer's home all year, except for like, if you go on vacation or stuff like that, it doesn't mean you can never leave the house. And then the same, you also have to have paid more than half the cost of keeping up the home for the year. So it's pretty much showing that you are have your household and are providing for it.
Mm-hmm. So essentially someone who doesn't meet those requirements, after their spouse passes away, eventually they're just going to be, instead of qualifying widower, they're going to have to look at potentially just single.
Yeah.
Which I know has a lower standard deduction.
Yes.
And you're paying higher taxes on fewer dollars much more quickly.
Yes. Yeah. If you don't have any dependents and it's just kind of you, then yes, you fall into that single bracket. And that's where, again, if that same 100,000, you want to make sure that you're prepped for that, especially on, it's pretty much what we call withholding. So if you normally had, like, say if you were collecting like Social Security and some RMDs from a retirement account and stuff, and your withholding was say at 10%, you might want to increase that to say 15% or something in order to help, you know, prepare yourself. And then this is where, like I said, meeting with your financial advisor and especially your accountant to see the different things of how you could adjust through the year. And then also you might have to adjust a little bit more on your, say, your cash flow. It was like, you know, how do I make adjustments for my lifestyle? What needs to be changed on that side as well?
And the other thing that I think a lot of people get confused about is Social Security, and is Social Security taxable?
Yes and no.
So tell us a little bit about that. Because for some clients, Social Security, they're having to pay taxes on it.
Yeah.
Others, they're not doing it.
So if Social Security is your only income, then, and again, everybody's situation is different, just a disclaimer here. But usually, if Social Security is your only income, you usually don't have to pay tax on it because you're usually unclear. If you have other income, and other income could be anything from dividends, interest, W-2 wages, retirement distributions, small business income, investment income, any other type of income pretty much, then pretty much that gets added to your Social Security. And then what happens is there is a fun little formula that happens that pretty much calculates how much of your Social Security is taxable based on how much your other income is. So it's not just like, okay, it's, you know, 25% or 50%. There's a fun little formula that happens. So pretty much the more other money you make, the more taxable Social Security is going to be. And then this is also on a federal level. On the state side, and specifically from New York State does not tax Social Security. So on the New York State side, you don't need to, but every state is different. So depending on where you live, I would, again, check with your accountant because everything's there. And then the same on New York State side, as long as you are over your retirement age, what they also do is they have an exclusion for $20,000 from your pension. So if you're getting like a retirement distribution stuff, $20,000 is excluded. Again, that's a New York State specific thing. Each state also has different things. The other thing is also if you are a New York State employee, so meaning if you worked for the New York State government or anything like that, or a New York City employee, then any pension or is also excluded on that side. But again, everything is very state specific. And the other thing is if you say lived in New York, got money from New York, but then you're like, I'm going to retire to Florida, but you move down, I would definitely consult with an accountant because sometimes while Florida does not have a state income tax, New York still does, and New York always wants their money. So you might have a requirement to file in New York. And again, I'm just using New York. This is true for any other states. So there could also always be different state requirements. And again, mm-hmm. definitely check with your accountant based on your specific situation.
So two things. Number one, I want everyone to check the show notes. We'll put a link to the Social Security Administration. They have that nifty-difty fun calculator. I love you call it fun. Mm-hmm. is on the website. It also gives you links to be able to get a little bit better information about what your benefit is, and also information that you can call to talk to the Social Security Administration to better understand if you are entitled to a widow's benefit, what that looks like, to make sure that you're maximizing all of that. And again, I think one of the pieces that really just makes it very clear, you got to have an accountant. These are all things that having an accountant to help you through this journey is so imperative. And I can guarantee you, I will personally guarantee you that whatever you're paying for an accountant, you're getting back in peace of mind, in protection from making mistakes doing it on your own, and potentially losing out on some tax savings opportunities that you just wouldn't know about, right? Most people don't do this all day and have the passion about taxes that you have or that I have. Anything else, Samantha, that you want to make sure that our listeners know about before we tune off? I know we're coming to the end of the podcast.
So one thing I would say is, and obviously I know everybody's situation is different, but I would say try to prepare as much as possible if you can with either organizing documents. Just on a personal side, I honestly went through this. My dad passed away very suddenly a few years ago, and he was also not the most organized person, and then trying to get everything and gather and go through, especially when you're trying to just process everything, is a very difficult time to go through. So if possible for anything, just prepare, have the folder, like know where, again, even if you don't know the taxes, know where the folder is, the way that they are, know where the bank documents are, know where your social security, if everything's in a certain spot. And again, it doesn't have to be hard copies. It could be, you know, whatever works for you. It could be digital, et cetera. Just know where they are. So that way, when this does happen, because you are going to have to dive into everything, you know where it is. That's like as much as you could be prepared for, honestly, something that we were not prepared for at all. And you kind of just dive in and hope for the best.
Yeah, it sounds like that's a, you know, really difficult experience, because you're not only grieving the loss of someone you really love, but you're trying to piece together like Sherlock Holmes. And I know for me, like, I don't want my kids to be mad at me when I die, right? I want them to think like, oh my God, mom was so organized. And yeah. I feel like one of the ways that you can really show your kids that you love them is trying to make it easy. None of this is a walk in the park, right? Talking about death, not exactly as exciting as talking about a vacation, but
yeah, the other thing that goes with being prepared and even just organized is, this is a very, especially the world we live in, the list of passwords and accounts that you have. Because for example, there could be a retirement account that, you know, your spouse never moved over and is like, I'll say, hanging out someplace, but you're entitled to that. You need to know about that. And then even just the list of passwords for, like, you know, if you have accounts in different places and stuff, just to know where it all is. Because again, you, at this time, you really don't want to start digging through everything, but you kind of have to. So as being as prepared and organized as possible, like if, again, if you, I hope everybody has a will or anything like that, but everything could kind of be in the same spot. So it's known, like, you know, here. And again, it is, I understand it's a very not fun conversation to have and difficult and like, but it does help on that side.
Well, I can't thank you enough for being here. Samantha, how do our listeners learn about where you are? And if you could talk a little bit about your practice, if you just work primarily in New York, or if you're able to work with people across the country as well.
Sure. So I'm a CPA in New York. I mostly work with clients in the New York City tri-state area. I am a solo, that is just me. So the best way to kind of, I'll say, get in touch with me is, I do have a website, but LinkedIn is kind of the best way to connect with me.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was a pleasure and everything.
This was a ton of fun, more fun than anyone could ever imagine talking about taxes, but we did it, right?
Exactly.
And for all of you listening, in show notes, you're going to have links to the Social Security Administration, also all of contact information that Samantha had shared. And if you have any questions about any of your taxes, Samantha is just, all I can say, is an unbelievable resource, not only from a knowledge perspective, but as you can tell today, just a really easy person to talk to. And so I hope that you have learned a lot and that you reach out to Samantha. Thank you, Samantha.
Thank you again.
Thank you for joining Financially Ever After today. Taxes can be intimidating, but I hope that today's podcast told you, with the right accountant and the right financial team, it doesn't have to be that way. I hear that from potential clients, that sometimes financial advisors are intimidating. But what that tells me is they're not with the right financial advisor. If you have any questions on your finances as a widow and want to make sure that you're on the path to a financially secure future, please reach out to me. at stacy@francisfinancial.com, stacy@francisfinancial.com, or you can visit our website at www.francisfinancial.com. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Financially Ever After Widowhood. If there's a question you'd love for us to answer on the podcast, we can do that for you. All you have to do is give us a call, and the number is 347-682-5580. Let me say that again, 347-682-5580. Whether you're working with an advisor or you're maybe doing it on your own, we invite you to reach out to us at www.francisfinancial.com, or you can email me at Stacy, S-T-A-C-Y, at francisfinancial.com. Our hope is to be a resource for you to help you also find a great financial advisor, whether that be with our firm or one of our trusted colleagues. Please be sure to like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast, and join us next time on Financially Ever After Widowhood.